Welcome to the Niched Agency Podcast, where we delve into the journey of owners who have gone from saying yes to everyone and every project to thriving industry leaders and authorities. Here's your host, Ryan McGovern.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back. For those of you that don't know me yet, I'm Ryan McGovern, currently the sales director at SEO Brothers. Prior to that, I've owned my own agencies, been in your shoes, sold lots and lots and lots of digital services. Joined with me today is our guest, Ramiro Valesco of Go Events. He's the co-founder of Go Events. Ramiro, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Dude, thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a slow start to the day. You know, it's been one of those days where you wake up feeling hungover, even though you obviously didn't drink the night before.
Sure, yeah. Been there. Nothing like a whole pot of coffee can't take care of.
Yeah, literally, that's where we're at right now.
Yeah.
So, feeling good.
Good. Thank you. Again, thank you for being here. As the name implies, Niched Agency Podcast, we have niche agency owners on and we hear about their stories. And those of you listening right now who are been longtime listeners, first time listeners, you'll know the sort of format that we go through here. And Ramiro, I know you mentioned you listened to a couple episodes yourself, so you kind of know what's coming. First of all, I want to hear about your story in your words. And you can take this as far as you want. If you want to go all the way back to high school, feel free. But where did your professional journey start and where are you now?
I'll tell you what, I might have to go all the way back to high school or even earlier.
Yeah, do it.
So I have a little bit of an uncommon upbringing, I'll say. When I was a toddler, I got yoinked out of Mexico and sort of had to, got taken all over the place due to my father's job. I ended up living, you know, when I was two, it was off to Colombia, and then it was Colombia, El Salvador, then the US for a little bit, then Cuba, then, you know, like we sort of hopped all over the place. And fifth grade, I ended up going seventh, eighth grade, I ended up going to Switzerland. And from there it was, you know, Romania and then the UK. Like, yeah, no, it was nuts. Like I did Germany for a little bit, Indonesia to like after uni. So like
all of this is before graduating from uni?
This was, except for Indonesia. Indonesia was right after university.
Okay. And now you're...
And I'm in Mexico.
Back in Mexico. Yeah.
Okay. So I had this sort of weird experience of being all over the place and, you know, seeing different cultures and seeing how different places do things, which I think is just a huge edge.
You had to have been the most well-traveled 17-year-old there ever was. You know?
Yeah, probably up there. And what it leads to is like, you're not smarter. You just saw more people do things differently. So you're like, oh, why don't you do things like I saw they do over there? And I was like, oh, because people haven't thought of it here. And I was like, okay, neat. Like, so it was like such a huge edge, you know, and like just having seen more people do things is a huge privilege.
Hugely beneficial. Yeah.
So I come back to Mexico. So I graduate from high school in Romania, the uni in the UK, and I do engineering, mechanical engineering for God knows what reason. I am not an engineer by any stretch of the imagination.
You had to pick something, right?
Yeah. I figured, you know, back then, like, listen, I can't be a dentist, but I can do pretty much anything with an engineering degree.
What sort of engineering?
Mechanical.
Mechanical? Cool.
Yeah.
My brother is a mechanical engineer.
Oh, see. I bet you if he actually does mechanical engineering, I bet you he's a really smart guy.
He is. Yeah. My brother's the smartest guy I know. Yeah.
There you go. And, you know, some of us weren't that. And we just sort of pretended to be.
Sure.
So finished uni, went to Indonesia for a bit. And then I was like, you know what? Like, I need to be back in Mexico. Like,
is that where most of family is or what brought you back?
It was mostly like, I feel like I'm from here.
Yeah.
Like I would come back like every couple of years, like during the summers or during whatever, you know, and it was like, oh, like this is my culture. It feels natural. And I think everywhere else I'd been an outsider. Everywhere else I'd been like, oh, where are you from? Oh, how do you, you know, like so many like little things that it was nice to just be in a place that like you were built in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I came back and immediately obviously started looking for engineering jobs and then went, wow, they make nothing in Mexico. Like entry level was making like 7-8 years ago. So I'm sure it's gone up somewhat now, but it was like $500-$600 a month, like the offers. Like,
oh,
okay.
Wow. Okay.
And I was like, right. Like, that's not what I'm doing. Like, it's, you know, I'd rather actually spun up very briefly a hamburger place, vegan burgers. Cause I was like, you know what? Like,
oh, cool.
Yeah. I was like, listen, I could make more money at least selling burgers than, you know, like doing math that I don't know how to do.
Yeah.
So, as previously established, I'm not a good engineer.
I know that. Like, after my brother graduated, he went to Michigan State for his mechanical engineering. After he graduated, his entry level, obviously in the US, his entry level job paid him like $60,000. Was there a reason why you didn't want to travel up north?
I just kind of want to be in country. Like
you said, that's where you're comfortable and that's where you feel like you're home. Yeah. Okay.
This was a huge tension point in my family because obviously, like, my dad worked his ass off. He was like, listen, like, I want you to not be in Mexico. It's dangerous, whatever. Like, the perception was really bad. He's like, man, there's no, like, economic opportunities. And I was like, listen, I want to be here. I'll figure it out.
So Burger Shop is where we left off, which I love vegan Burger Shop. Adam, one of our co-founders, if he's listening to this, he'll love that. He's a vegan as well.
Awesome.
But yeah, start from there.
And then from there, I was like, I need to find, like, something inside me just went, wait, I speak, like, native English. Like, my English is better than my Spanish. Like, what am I doing looking for jobs in Spanish when I can be looking for jobs in English? So I literally just wrote, like, I no ChatGPT back then yet. So I rewrote my CV in English, closed my eyes, and threw it everywhere.
Yeah.
I was like, listen, I don't care what you do. If you need an English CV, here it is. Close my eyes, threw the darts at the wall. Sent like 60, 70 CVs on Indeed. This was maybe like nearly 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And I get called in by an Amazon agency. By this point, mind you, I have no idea about, I've been shopping on Amazon for years and years and years, but I have no idea about anything marketing related. And I'm like, okay, I got called in for an interview. Let me look at the job on Indeed, like the job posting to see which one it is that I applied to. Job listing had been taken down. And I was like, oh, no.
So you're kind of flying blind.
Yeah. I was like, do I not show up? Like, am I just going to go make a fool of myself? And something inside me went, just go fool of yourself. Get used to rejection. You know, it's like dating. Like, my whole idea of dating is like, you can't get upset when someone doesn't like you because it's not about you, right? Like, you can't be what everyone wants all the time.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'm just going to go make a fool of myself. And it's fine. I went to the mall, got a really nice shirt, got some really nice pants. You know, I was like, all right, I'm going to look really like nice and tidy for this, which you briefly saw me on camera. That is not that same guy anymore.
You know? You looked pretty tidy. I don't know, man. Don't worry about that.
Thank you. And, you know, I show up to the interview and I mean, this is maybe too much detail, but like I go in, I show up late to the interview, got incredibly lucky that they come down and look for me and I'm just waiting in line to be let in. And I'm like, yeah, they just won't let me in. I don't know what's going on.
I've been here forever. I swear.
Yeah, I've been here since like, you know, 2 hours ago. He's like, you want a cup of coffee? I'm like, sure. He gives me, like, my previous boss gives me a cup of coffee. I sip it and I literally tell him, bro, if this is the coffee you're serving here, I'll work for free. I don't care. It was a great cup of coffee, you know? And we get to chatting and he makes me an offer. I'm like, all right, cool.
He's like, cool. So about that comment you made.
So about,
we're gonna be paying you in coffee.
And I would have taken it.
Yeah. Where is this geographically?
In Guadalajara, in Mexico.
In Guadalajara. And is that where your family lives?
Yeah. I mean, my family at that point lived all over the place. My sister was living in Spain. My other sister was living in Rotterdam. And my parents were living in New York. So I was here living with my grandma, you know, sort of like trying to figure my life out.
Okay, sure. But you had somebody close by.
Yeah. I had somebody, yeah. I had my grandma. We, you know, we had a great vibe.
That's nice. Well, I mean, you said former boss, so I'm assuming the interview went well. Yeah. And what was your position there?
So I came in. Oh my God, this is the best part. I came in. I didn't even know what job I got. When I showed up, because they were like, oh, we like you for like, this was one of the first companies that started building teams in Mexico. Now it's very common, but you know, 7 years ago, they were one of the first people that went, hey, Mexico's got a great level of English. It's a great spot to live. They were living in Playa del Carmen at the time. You know, let's go and build a team. So they were like, we like you for an intermediary position where you can be like communicating with the US and like, but also working in Mexico. And I was like, all right, cool. That all sounds great. What is my actual job? And it took me about 2 weeks to find out that I was an account manager. So that was cool.
There you go. Yeah, man. Just being bilingual is so freaking valuable.
It's so useful. Like I'm not going to get into sort of like a tirade right now, but I will say that most of my life, and I think most people's life is like luck. There's a lot of hard work, of course. If you don't work hard, you don't get there. But, you know, like I was born and I got yoinked away at 2 years old, dude. I had no input on my learning English. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it just sort of happened.
It just sort of happened to me and I showed up with the right tools. Dude, I did it instead of going to class, I was playing StarCraft 24/7. And then it turns out that StarCraft taught me massive business building skills. Like it was insane. Yeah.
Are you sure? StarCraft taught you business skills?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, and I'll tell you what, CEO of Shopify once said he learned more from playing StarCraft than he did from business school.
Man, maybe I'm just not putting those together. I didn't really play StarCraft. I played a little bit of StarCraft 2.
Oh, that's what I was playing StarCraft 2, yeah. And the resource management, the planning ahead, like how defensive.
Okay, yeah.
You learn a lot of lingo that
playing
actually.
Playing a long game.
Yeah, the idea of like, all right, are we being aggressive or defensive? Like in business terms, you're going like, are we aggressively expanding or are we trying to bulk up the services that we have, make sure that the product is good, blah, blah, blah. You can conceptualize it in these terms of like, how likely is it that I get screwed short term and how much can I invest in the long term sort of strategic growth over the next year or whatever, 5 years or whatever.
Yeah, I can totally see that now. Yeah.
So I got incredibly lucky and like even my goofing off helped me in my professional life.
Yeah. So you were an account manager for this company for how long?
For 5 years, I think. I eventually became like a mama hen for the account managers and then like director meetings and all this stuff. And it got to a point where it was like with these same guys. So like I was like, all right, we need a next step. What's up? But some stuff happened, you know, got some pretty nice job offers to the point where I was like, all right, guys, like I'm not saying match it, but what's the next step?
Yeah. And there was like nowhere up essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So it was like the founders and then me. And then I was like, all right, like I feel like, you know, the black sheep here, like it's all four of us, but y'all are my bosses. And that then evolved into building the agency in Latin America.
Okay.
So we did that for a bit. We did the marketing agency in Latin America and it was bad.
How so?
You know, like you're used to working with American clients, with global North clients who are like higher customer acquisition and also more respect for other people's labor. You're suddenly working with people that are like, you're charging them half your usual fee and they're going, why am I paying you so much? And you're like, well, it's either I drop the level of service to the point where I'm not comfortable with it, or I keep arguing with you every invoicing period. And that's not worth it to me, right? Like, so we went through that enough. And at the same time, on the US agency side, we were having enough interest about, hey, how do we sell in Mexico? Mexico's popping off. How do we sell in Mexico? They were like, hey, why don't we figure this out? So it was a hard pivot. I like to say that it was just the right amount of hubris where we looked at like a completely different industry, importing and logistics and, you know, international trade. I always said, sure, let's do it. Like we looked at people who built their lives, like moving stuff across borders and we went, yeah, I can do that. And we just got started. We worked on it for a year, you know, we figuring out logistics, figuring out importing partners, figuring out importing restrictions, figuring out accounting, figuring out tax loopholes and importing loopholes and warehousing and everything that sort of needed to happen. And we launched a couple months ago and we've got overwhelming success, like real responses. And it's just really exciting to be having an active sort of hand in offering a better consumer experience to Mexican shoppers. Right now, we're limited to Mexico. We're working on the rest of LATAM and whatever, you know. But
so I know this, but audience doesn't know. What is your niche?
You know what? That would have helped if I had said that at some point.
No worries.
We focus on helping foreign brands, and by foreign, we mean non-Latin American or non-Mexican, into local marketplaces.
You say getting them into. Can you elaborate?
So traditionally, there's sort of three ways you can get into any given market, right? You can either get in natively, build a local business, register for tax, get a local representative, whatever, whatever. And, you know, now you just exist there and you can just leverage that. The second one is NARF on Amazon. There's global selling on Mercado Libre and there's obviously drop shipping from your Shopify, but basically keeping your stuff in the US or whatever country you're in and shipping it down as the orders come in. And the third one is to work through a distributor, right? Like I need to find someone that wants to buy my product up front, that sees a potential and work out a deal. They buy my product, probably on terms, and then they sell it themselves. All three of these have issues. Okay, so in Mexico, if you're trying to set up your own business entity, it's absolutely nuts. It'll take you, you know, $30,000 because...
Sorry, if you're trying to set up your own business entity, you have to pay $30,000?
As a foreigner, yeah, because you're going to have to find a local business partner because you need to have a Mexican here. Yeah, dude, you need a local business partner. You're going to need to find an accountant that does your Mexican taxes. Every single lawyer is going to charge you the foreign fee, right? Like they're going to be like, all right, yeah, you don't speak Spanish, right? Like we're doing this. So... probably very expensive. Yeah, it's probably very expensive to get into country. So,
man, everyone listening in the US is like, holy shit, all I did was pay my $50 online.
Yeah.
And I got my LLC registered. Like, damn.
Dude, here it's like, all right, like, so the company is partially owned by an American company, partially owned by myself.
Okay. Yeah. You did say we a couple of times. So you have some partners?
We have some partners. Yeah. But it's so funny that it's like, all right, well, the American company who constitutes it, well, so-and-so-and-so. All right. Well, we need apostilled passports, apostilled birth certificates, apostilled, like all this. It was a lot of hoops to jump through. So generally we, you know, the thesis here is it's not worth it for you to be in country if you're going to have to spend that much money and then not know what the return is. You know what? There's a chance you crush and you make that money back immediately. But like, what are the odds of that? How much attention can you really assign to? Yeah.
You're taking a much bigger risk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's still the inventory risk, right? Like you still sent the inventory on top of that. And so that's on one hand. Then if you're working through NARF, you know, remote fulfillment through Amazon or dropshipping or whatever it is that you're holding the inventory in the US, listen, I don't want to pay $10 delivery fee on a $10 item and then also wait a week for it, right? Like this is just, you're not going to get an accurate sense of the market because most people are just going, I'll just get like a slightly less good alternative locally that came, that like showed up in my house tomorrow, right? Like, so that's also a big no-go, at least. Like that's who we think is mostly benefiting from our services. And then also there's a distributor model, right? But distributors aren't just bringing anyone on. So you have to like generate pre-existing demand, and then distributors have to mark up the product at the very least 35%, right? At which point is the consumer really going to get a fair price? Like there's too many issues with all three of them to really give Mexican shoppers a really good purchasing experience.
Well, you obviously have to pick one, right? So what are you doing?
So we did, listen, we'll just do consignment. Like, listen, we can act as distributors, sure. And we can do the legal paperwork of distributors and the local regulations and the local compliance. But ultimately, if I'm not putting risk down in capital, if I'm putting capital down and risking it on a product, I can open my doors and bring in infinitely more people, right? And I'm lowering your barrier to entry by you not having to do any of this garbanzo beans, like any of this garbage that needs to happen, right? All you need to do is send me inventory and let's test it out.
Pretend that I am a prospect of yours and we end up working together. Explain it to me like I'm 5 years old because, Ramiro, I have no idea.
All right.
I speak marketing and that's it.
Here's what I would say. How involved do you want to be?
Zero. I just want to give you money and make money.
Say, send me your product to Laredo, Texas. That's it. Send me your product to Laredo. I'll get it in and I'll do all of that legwork. And we'll be on across 5 marketplaces. We'll be doing the ad management. We'll be doing everything that needs to happen on in country.
What is included within that everything, if you don't mind going into that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I'm trying to not, how can I say this? I'm trying to not just make it sound like a sales pitch. Like
oversimplify
it? No, I don't mind oversimplifying it. I'm just trying to not make it sound like I'm aggressively pitching something. I'm just really proud of what we do.
Oh, yeah. No, you toot your horn, man. That's what I invite a lot of people here to do. Yeah,
go for it. So we'll do your ad management, which is bread and butter for anyone that's actually messaging is probably the most important thing, which we also do. But everything we do in marketing is 2 things, right? Traffic and conversion rate. That's it. Everything else, we're talking funnel. All right. Well, that's traffic that will later get into conversion rate. Like everything we do is traffic times conversion rate. So we have to try to optimize for those things and mostly traffic in a space where the conversion rate is kind of coming naturally from having less products in market, from having American brands that have tons of reviews already in the US. So like, we're just like, how do we drive traffic? So we'll take care of the advertising. We'll take care of the ad management, the PPC. We'll take care of the SEO. We'll take care of the inventory management. We'll take care of like the listing creation. We'll take care of the FDA approvals in Mexico. It's called Cofepris. Like labeling. It's like, listen, you're going to pay for it. We're going to bill you back for it. But you didn't have to spend a single second thinking about these things.
Yeah, yeah. That's incredibly valuable. If you're,
thank you.
Hopefully, I won't ask you what your margins are, but yeah, I'm sure it's well worth it for that person who can just invest and see some gains.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, listen, and if it didn't work out, because you and I know this as marketers, and most people that are going to be listening to this are marketers, you cannot promise market acceptance. Sometimes, no matter how well you did your job, the market just goes, I'm not really interested in this, you know?
Yeah, I always say when I'm selling SEO, purely organic search, is that you will lead the horse to water, but you know,
exactly. You
have to make it drink. And like some people just don't want to drink your shitty water, you know?
Exactly.
And like, I'm sorry, I can show you, like, here's your report. Traffic looks great. Calls are up 25% since we started, but like, they just don't want it. We don't do a lot of e-com, so that exact scenario is pretty rare, but we work with a ton of local businesses and multi-local franchise, for example, but yeah.
That was such a funny way to put it. Sometimes someone wants your shitty water.
Yeah, yeah. Get your shitty water out of here. But you know, it's hard to know until you're 5 months into the project.
Exactly.
The water's not good. So,
yeah. I mean, and I'm sure you and I have had the same experience, which is also like, dude, this is some shitty water. And then it just blows up. And you're like, oh, well, I guess I should have trusted.
Yeah.
like, you know, people should be excited for your product. Like, whatever it is you're selling, if you're not excited about it, like, well, then what are we doing here? So if you come to me and you're like in your case, help me with SEO, and it's like, sick, okay. I assume you're excited about it. So I assume at least one person wants it. Let's see how many more people want it. Let's lead all the horses to this puddle, right?
That's a great way to think about it. We look for like little nuggets of wisdom, I call them, little nuggets on the show. That's a good little nugget.
Thank you.
Takeaway. Somebody write that down. You've been doing this for how long now? It's just been a couple of years?
No. So we actually, after the agency and after all of this, we actually started aggressively going after clients maybe like 6 months ago.
6 months ago. Okay.
Yeah.
And you told me prior to us hopping on what the business stood for, but what the name of the company?
Yeah. I'm going to preface this by saying that I don't like taking things too seriously. Like, I'll work my ass off and I'll be serious when I have to be. But where I can goof off, I will. So we were coming up with names and we're like, we like Avance. It's progress in Spanish. It doesn't have a D like advance. You know, it's Avance. And then we were like, Avance.com or whatever was really expensive. And we're like, oh, what about GoAvance? And it looked nice. And then we were like, wait. And we literally had like a whole discussion about like, English speakers will have a really hard time pronouncing this. But we're like, yeah, but it looks really nice when it's written out. And then like, we built a logo for it. And we're like, it's GoAvance now. But we were like, we went back and forth going like, should we put an accent on it? Should we have Avance?
Avance. Then it'd be French, and then it'd be bad, and then it'd be
marketing except this through the floor. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, God. Don't sell your soul like that. I like it.
So yeah, we're GoAvance. Hopefully someday recognizable name, but for the time being, it's like, how do you pronounce that? Listen,
you sound like an ambitious guy, so I'm sure you'll get to where you want to go.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Okay, so that's the last 6 months, and you said it's just been going really well.
Yeah. So I had to switch my mentality personally because we were turning away so many clients. You're not going to sell in Mexico. You're not going to sell in Mexico. It's just not going to move. And then it was like, listen, we're dropping the barriers of entry so much that this is a worthy gamble. Like for what we're charging, it's worth it for people. And I'm literally, another thing that I'm not very proud of is I did crypto trading for a living for 2 years. Which is just this sort of position where it's like, you're not bringing anything to the world and you're just gambling, hoping you're smarter than the other guys. You know what? Like, I'm decent at it. I just, not my thing.
Hey man, look at everyone that bought any Dogecoin. Like, let's be real.
Oh my God. Seriously.
I put some chips in those baskets and I picked the wrong baskets.
Oh yeah.
I bought a bunch of NFTs that were, I don't know. I bought like 3 rug pulls that I was super excited about.
Oh no.
Yeah, and they all promise like, I'm gonna be the next Bored Ape Yacht Club and this will be the next whatever. Like, it's, I don't know. It's just like preying on people's hopes and dreams, kind of.
And then you go on like crypto Twitter and you're looking at someone like, because I only follow like traders that I profoundly respect as traders. And you see like there are other takes outside of trading and you go like, oh, you kind of suck.
Oh, you're like kind of an asshole.
Yeah. And it was like, oh no, like, is this, you know, if you judge me by the crowd that I'm like following, like, wow, I don't want to. So anyway, so I did that for a bunch. So I think a lot in expected value terms, right? And I'm looking at the gamble that we're selling, which is like getting in country. There's a barrier to entry. There's risk reward here. You know, I don't mean gamble as in flipping a coin. I mean gamble as in you're weighing investment versus potential outcome. I'm going, wait, this is a positive EV trade, no matter who it is. So why am I turning people away?
When you could have just like sort of pivoted yourself. Not really pivoted, but...
Yeah, when this is an actual good investment for them.
Yeah.
Like this is, I realized like I had to flip it because going, I charge so little as an upfront fee. And then it's just like your investment is in inventory. I had people going, no, no, let me in. And I'm like, no, no, it won't be good for you. And they go, no, no, let me in. And I'm like,
no,
oh,
trust
I'm
me.
Silly. Yeah, and I went, I'm being a jerk by thinking I know more than them.
Sure.
So I went, no, okay, cool. Like, let's open the doors and let's just change our approach to understanding that I'm even more proud of our product now for service. Because it's like, this is a positive EV, like trade.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Who is that? There's some famous author that said something along the lines of the first step of brilliance or some sort of positive trait like that is knowing that you know nothing. I think it was Mark Twain,
maybe.
I can't think of it off the top of my head, but maybe, yeah, you're right. Like, you check your ego, check your hubris. Like, you don't really know a whole lot.
Exactly.
Nobody does. We're all just, that's why I try not to take anything too seriously too, because we're all just trying to figure this shit out.
Exactly. So I'm out there thinking like, is it really like do I know more than them with the amount of times that I've thought this product, no way it takes off, and I do my job and it does? I'm going, do I have any right to tell someone your product won't sell? I'm a fool in that sense. I don't know more than the market. So that sort of changed our perspective. We opened our doors and said, like, hey, man, if
you... But you have to, like, your heart was in the right spot, though, it sounds like. It sounds like you just didn't want anyone to have a really bad experience, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It always comes from that. Listen, dude, you know this. Like, you're in an agency. You do your job right. People still get mad at you sometimes. And it's like, I don't want people mad at me. So I'm like, and I think some part of me was just like turning everyone away. Because I was like, if there's like a 1% chance you're going to be mad at me, like, I don't want this.
Well, we talked about relationships and dating a little bit. It is, I make that analogy a lot too, because it's so much like finding a good partner to do, like, who wants to bring us SEO clients, white label, is so much like finding a good girlfriend. I'm married now with children.
But congratulations. Beautiful. That's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, we're going to have a boy any day now.
Oh my God, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, he's like, we're 39 weeks, so we'll see.
My God.
Yeah, here. Yeah. But when I was dating, I got pretty good at it. And I think that gives you kind of an edge in not just sales, but like developing relationships, like nurturing relationships. Like the same amount of effort that I put in, I know I'm going to get out, at least if I'm in a good relationship or I'm with a good person. So if it's the right person, apply a lot of the same. Yeah, if it's the right person, you can apply a lot of the same sort of characteristics from a real relationship, like a physical relationship, to a business relationship.
Yeah, like, does it not sound insane to go out with someone and then go, no, I don't want to see you again because you're not going to like me? That is what?
Yeah, that does sound a little
absolute
funky.
Maniac.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no, I don't want to see you again because what if I'm a jerk? Or what if I'm not what you think I am? What?
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Shut up. Just go. Like, you don't know more. Like, I'll rant about this all the time. Too many people that have dating issues is because they don't trust the other person to be a whole person with a brain as well.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, this person in front of you is a whole person. They have a brain and they have feelings, and let them decide about you.
Being too controlling. And it's the same in a business relationship too.
Yeah.
If you're trying to be too controlling, or if you don't let the other people think for themselves. That's why we have, like, we call our partners very intentionally. Like, where they are not our clients. It's a partnership, like two-way street here. So that's part of the reason.
100%.
Our audience is going to be thinking to themselves, like, this, like, Latin America e-com, like, this kind of thing. Like, how can they apply some of what we have talked about to their own agencies? Or if they are in a similar situation where they need the help of someone like you, what would that circumstance be? That might be a better question.
Yeah. So I'll say a couple of things. I'll start off by going a little bit backwards and being like, everyone should be thinking about Latin American expansion and expansion in general. The US e-commerce, Shopify, everything, anything you're doing in the US is more expensive, more competed. Of course, it has the highest volume, like, on the planet. But there are easier wins to get depending on who you're partnering with and what that execution is looking like. And I'm not just talking Mexico. I'm not just talking Latin America. If you can get into Europe relatively easily, do that. If you can get to Japan is a very strong e-commerce marketplace, get to Japan. If you can get to Australia or Oceania in Spanish, I can't pronounce that.
Oceania. Yeah.
Oceania.
You were close enough.
Absolutely. Like, look into it.
Yeah.
Why? Because, it's only 15% of the volume. Listen, if I offered you 15% bump in sales, you'd take it every time. So look at that review, right? Like, look at that risk reward and see, like, what that's looking like. All right. For Mexico specifically, you should, at the very first step, look to see if your product is being resold. There's a lot of resellers in country that will just drop ship from the US, 2x the price, get maybe a sale a month, but they don't care because they have 10,000 products in their catalog.
Oh, right? Yeah. Same with referral marketing. You know, it's like, I can go on Pinterest and create a profile and just get, like, a referral code through Kohl's or whatever. Like, if I could do that with 10,000 products and just let it make some money.
Exactly. So check if it's being sold. Also check if you can get on remote fulfillment. Now, completely skipping Mercado Libre, like we haven't talked, we're probably not going to get to Mexican or Latin American marketplaces, but Mercado Libre is the biggest marketplace in Latin America. So, but you should still go on remote fulfillment and see if you're eligible. Why? Because it's an easy way. You're going to make a couple sales a month, but listen, you're in country. maybe like you're starting some amount of a very, very low buzz, but you exist, right? Third, make sure that those margins make sense, because remote fulfillment on Amazon will be up to $8, $9 shipping for small products. And then check where your consumers are buying, what are paying in Mexico. And if you're drop shipping from your website, I'll look at what they're paying, because it's very likely that you're just pricing yourself out of the market. But you can exist for like the people that most want the product.
It seems like so often, and I don't want to give a percentage, but I'm going to, like 95% of the time I see products offering whatever, it's US and Canada only. Like, why not? Let's do the whole, like, do all of North America. Why not?
I'll tell you why. Because you use USPS to send it, which barriers? Most people do.
Oh, okay. So USPS doesn't ship to Mexico.
UPS gets it through the border and hands it to you through UPS. FedEx gets it through the border and hands it to you through FedEx. USPS, because it's a national service, they'll hand it off to the Mexican National Post. And you may as well have thrown it in a fire. okay. Like, I will
good
be honest,
to know.
Like,
good to know.
It's just, it's not useful.
Yeah.
I got invited to a wedding 3 months before the wedding in the UK. I went to the UK, went to the wedding, came back a month later, my invitation arrived. So that was a 4 month delivery time.
Thanks a lot, guys.
And it was pre-opened, by the way. Like, that envelope could have been really dangerous. You
oh,
know?
My goodness.
So you can look at it and start trying to understand like what the demand is like, but it's going to be very tough if you're not in country. If you would like us to just straight up do like a market analysis or chat or just have a conversation about like what that would look like.
You do that for free?
Yeah, we do that for free. Market analysis, like in depth, we charge for.
Yeah, but if you want to have like more of a generalized kind of.
Exactly.
Just a friendly chat. Yeah.
That's sort of what we're at right now, where it's like, listen, like we can just have a chat, see what it would look like. Mm-hmm. See if the unit economics would even make sense for you for the marketplace that it's at.
I'm sure that someone listening would benefit from having a conversation about it with you.
Yeah, for
I'm
sure.
100% sure. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Because there's so many, like, yes, we assume that our audience is all agency owners, but agency owners are often have their finger in more than one pie. They're oftentimes have 6, 7, 8 businesses. So you never know.
And I'll tell you what. So something that, like I said, I'm not involved in the agency game anymore, like directly in like the marketing agency game, rather. I'm sort of like a marketing agency offshoot. And just to be 100% clear, we do have like our referral agreements. You have like a non-compete, non-solicitation, like all these things. Because it is weird that like agency is part owner of my business and yet we have these referrals. But what I'm trying to get to is I've seen referral partnerships consistently pay off. And that's something that we are actively sort of growing, which is
awesome. Yeah.
Which is literally like, especially off platform agencies. I understand that like, hey, I'm an Amazon agency. It feels weird that you're part owned by an Amazon agency. I'm like, we have the contract, but I totally get it. But off platform agencies, we're actually having a really good time of going like, anyone that you refer us, you do their off platform marketing in Mexico as well, right? Or finding symbiotic relationships. So we're both growing and making money off of this and offering better services to clients. Is really
everybody wins.
Yeah, everybody wins. And it's actually so satisfying. It's so satisfying where it's like, hey, we want to sign up. And we're like, all right, your product really needs to be seen. We have a TikTok agency to refer you to that they'll do your TikToks in Mexico. And then, you know, we'll.
Yeah, and you have like a 15% rev share off that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there you go.
So anyone that wants to chat, like I'm open to just
see
what we can do for you.
How can people get in touch with you?
So I made the terrible, horrible, no good mistake of having my Calendly linked directly to the website. It's not someone else. It's not, it should be.
I've done that too.
Yeah. It should be one of the SDRs. It should be, but listen, I'm a control freak. So still probably by the time, like probably for the next 6 months, it's my calendar on goavance.com.
Okay. Can you spell Avance once?
Yeah. It's GOAVANCE.
There you go, folks. If anything that Ramiro has said sparked interest or you just want to chat, sounds like a good guy to chat with.
I'm like that mushroom. I'm a fun guy. Like,
yeah. Oh my.
All credibility dropped through the floor.
Yeah. I don't know about, I wanted to have a chat with you after we got off this call, but I don't know anymore. I'm a fun guy. Damn. I'm a dad too. Are you a dad?
I'm not a dad. I make dad jokes, but I'm not there yet.
That was
yet.
A great dad joke. Yeah.
Thank you.
Put that one in the bank. All right, folks, I think that's going to be it for us today. I've been your host, Ryan McGovern. Thank you so much, Ramiro, for being here and tuning in to Niche Agency Podcast. If you're new here, please subscribe. We'd love to see you come back. if you're looking for a scalable white label SEO solution, I want to talk to you. My email is ryan@seobrothers.co, or you can find me on LinkedIn, Ryan McGovern, McGovern. And again, if you want to get in touch with Ramiro, he supplied his website earlier. Definitely check that out. Give him a call and see if you can't work something fun out. But yeah, thank you again for being here, Ramiro.
No, thank you so much for having me, Ryan. That was actually fantastic.
That was my pleasure. All right. Take care.
Have a good one.